Hare Krishna. Welcome. Today, my talk is everything is personal. Everything is personal. Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedanti Tattva Vidas Tattvam Yajjnanam Advayam Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shabdyate. Translation: Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. These are the three levels of God realization. So, Brahman, energy, spirit, pure spirit. Brahman is also described in the Vedas as the effulgence, the sheen, the light that emanates from the body of God. Many other religions recognize this all-pervasive light or spiritual matrix upon which the material world has been placed. And without it, all this would fall apart. It permeates everything, right? So in Catholicism, they call that the what? Holy Spirit or Holy Ghost, right? Same. It's the energetic manifestation of God. There's no variegatedness. It's all one. Are there aspects of God are just everything is one and the same energy? Yeah, definitely. The second level is Paramatma. Paramatma is, we are Atma, we are souls. In our body is an Atma, that is you, atomic spark, that is existing in this body, living in this body, controlling this body, animating it. Until when? Until it's time to leave. Until your lease agreement is up. Then you're out. Also, in the body is the Parama Atma, Supreme Soul. Soul, Atma, Supreme Soul, God. What's he doing in there? Someone's got to look after you. Keep an eye on you, isn't it? So this is known as God in diversity. Why diversity? Because he's in every single one of every species in the material creation. He pervades everything as the super soul. God in the heart. In a blade of grass? Yes. In an ant? Yes. In a butterfly? Yes. In our mother, the cow? Yes. Everything. That's the second level, to recognize that God is present in each and every person or being in the creation. That's a higher level than just energy. And look at all the variegatedness. Look at us all here. No matter if we had all of the world, all the people in the world, if we could all stand together in one place, no two people would be the same. No two people would look alike. You might find one that looks kind of like you, the doppelganger. No two people are alike. Can you imagine? What kind of mind, what kind of brain does it take to create that kind of diversity and uniqueness? In individuality in all of these beings. That they're all similar but different. As we look at each other, we're different races. or we come from different countries, so we can look at each other and go, oh yeah, this one, obviously he's this, he's probably from there, listen to his accent, well, I know he's not from here, you know. But we can recognize certain things, you know, among each other. This one belongs to this group, this one belongs to that group. Have you meditated on this? It's mind-blowing, the diversity. And even the most creative people in the world could never even come close to that. Not even close. Oh, but no, no, there's no God. There's no such thing. It's just all happened by accident. This is happenstance. Say certain scientific people. Third level, personality. Personality, the individual. Who do you have relationships with? You all have relationships in this life. We all do. There's a mother somewhere, a father somewhere, a brother, a sister, a wife, a husband, children, friends, employers, employees. Right? It's all personal. All of that is a personal thing. You can't have a relationship with energy. You can sit in energy. You can lose yourself in energy. You can meditate in energy. You could absorb energy. But you can't have a relationship, a give and take with it. It's not possible. You need a person. You need a form. We have relationships with our pets. Dogs. Cats. Some people love their pets more than they do humans. Isn't it? Sometimes the pet is the best friend. The dog is the man's best friend. That dog, it will be as loyal as possible to you, you know. So, but that's a personal form. It's all personal. In order to have a relationship, you need a subject and an object. In order to exchange love, to exchange feelings, to exchange anything, you need a subject and an object. We are the subject. And then your friend, your love, your pet, whomever, is the object. Now we begin. We exchange. And the more time we exchange, the more time we spend with each other, the more we treasure each other, appreciate each other, grow fond, grow to love one another, the more rewarding the relationship becomes. Even with a dog, yeah. Even with a dog, doesn't it? Why not God? Then, in that case. Here we practice bhakti yoga. We recognize all these levels of God realization. But we strive for that highest level. To have an intimate relationship directly with God. That's what we strive for here. In the form of Krishna. Why Krishna? Because Krishna is the most attractive form or manifestation of the Godhead. There are many, many, many of them. Now, God is one. His manifestations, his avatars, his expansions are many, thousands. Can't limit him. Not possible. So, let's take an example. Some of you have heroes. You have a hero growing up. Maybe it's a sports figure. Maybe it's a singer. Maybe it's a musician. Maybe it's a politician. I don't know. A writer, you have a hero. And you idolized that person. Maybe when you were a child, you put the poster up on the wall of the bedroom, right? He's my favorite. Supposing, whomever your hero may be, you get an opportunity to go to his house. I can't believe it. I'm going to his house. Well, you know, get cleaned up, put on your best clothes, and off we go. So what happens first? You ring the doorbell, somebody answers the door. Maybe it's his butler, his servant, or his housekeeper, somebody. Yeah. Invites you in. Oh, yes, you're here to see. Oh, okay. Come on in. And then his wife shows up. There's his wife. You meet his wife. She says, well, would you like to see, you know, take a tour around the place? Could I? I'd love to do that. So now we're taking the tour, personal tour. And you see in all the anecdotes, all the gold records on the walls, or whatever, the trophies, the statues. Huh? Wow, you all remember this one. That's my favorite. Right? So, now you're meeting, some other person comes. This is his manager. Another person comes. That's his cook. Cook wants to know what you want for lunch. And then you meet his agent. And then you meet the pool man who cleans the pool. Well, who are all these people? This is his friends and associates. That's the diversity. The first part, the energy, is the feeling, the space, the vibe in the house. What it looks like, how it's decorated. Huh? That's the energy. Then all these personalities, they're not him. They're all connected to him in some meaningful way. They are the diversity. Correct? Then what? Oh, here he comes. And he walks to the door. There he is. I want you to meet your hero. Which they wouldn't say it like that. The person you've always wanted to meet your entire life. Here he is. This is so-and-so. He's here to meet you. He's a big fan of yours. Great. So wonderful to meet you. Thank you for coming. Have they shown you around? Let me show you around. Huh? Are you having lunch with us? Oh, wonderful. Did you tell Cook what you wanted? Perfect. Huh? Now we have the relationship. You see? Same idea. Just put God there instead. Put Krishna there. Same thing. So, whatever level you want, it's up to you. But you want to reciprocal loving exchange, you have to meet the person. Let's take some examples. When Krishna was just a small baby, maybe 2 years old, three, living in Vrindavan with Yashoda, Mayi, and Nanda Maharaj, the sellers, the vendors come around. I love it the way they come around India and then how they call out and they use a certain sound and phrase of the words. It's very unique. It's almost like music. And they're calling out, here's the, I have your fruit, you know, the falawala. Right? Whatever it might be. And, so Krishna, here's the lady, the falawala, who's brought the fruit in the basket, and he had seen his parents before. Oh, when she comes out, because back in those days, 5,000 years ago in Vrindavan, it's the barter system. So they would bring out grains and give her grains, and she would give fruit, and there would be an exchange, like they often do in the marketplace, even still, I think, in some places. And but he had a tiny hand, and he had a handful of very few grains, and he's walking like this, and the grains are falling out of his hand as he goes. And he goes like this, and he hands her the grains. There's like four or five, you know. Oh, and she goes, oh, wonderful. Thank you so much. Okay, thank you. Let me give you fruits. Go like this. Put your hands like this. And she's loading them up with fruits like this. He can't leave anymore. So he thanks her. Bhut danyavad. Only he did it in Brijbasi language. And off he went. She looks down at her basket. It's filled. No more fruits. Jewels, gems, a fortune is what she found in her basket. Why? Because she made some little offering to God, to Krishna. This is from Krishna Book. Krishna Book is a kind of like a story, written like a story version of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And one of the reasons she gave him so much fruit is because she was so captivated by his beauty. However, whomever you have seen in your life, whether in person or in pictures, in print, on the TV, whatever, and you went, oh my God, that person is so beautiful, stunningly beautiful. Krishna's like that, but way more. Captivatingly beautiful. She just kept giving fruits. Prabhupada says here, the Lord is the bestower of all benedictions. If someone gives something to the Lord, he is not the loser. He is the gainer a million times. You give a little something, but will come back in return. Maybe not immediately. Will come back tenfold, a hundredfold, a thousandfold, a million. I don't know. Does it depend on how much you give? No. It doesn't depend on how much you give. It depends on how much love you give it with. How much is your heart in that giving? That's the difference. Krishna entered Mathura with Balaram when he was, what, 16? For the first time, invited to the wrestling match. Kamsa thought, hey, I'll finally fix this guy. All the demons that I sent to kill him off, they're all dead. I better, you know, handle this myself. I'll get our best wrestlers to finish him off. They had a big tournament. Wishful thinking on Kamsa's part, no? Anyway, so there, Balaram and Krishna were walking through the city. First time they've been in the big city, Mathura, except for the fact that he was born there. And there was a hunchback lady, very beautiful face, but really stooped over, you know, young. And she was the sandalwood wala, chandan wala. And he approached her and he says, this sandalwood, my dear, you have your my brother and I would love to have some fragrant sandalwood we can smear on our body. And she says, oh beautiful boy, I, all this belongs to Kongsa. It's for him. It's, I'm not to give it to anybody, but I would happily give it to you. Like this. So, gives him the sandalwood. Krishna looks at her and he takes her chin gently like this, with his hand under her chin. And he steps on her feet with his foot and he goes like this. And all of a sudden, she's a hunchback no more. And she is tall, straight, large breasts, full hips, with her beautiful face, and she has stepped into her womanhood like never before. Oh, my goodness, what has happened? Well, you give something to Krishna in love, he takes away that negative karma she was suffering since birth. Okay. Then, later on, when he was an adult, there was a kingdom called Vidarbha, and the king there was Bhishmak, and he had a beautiful, beautiful daughter named Rukmini. He also had, I think he had three sons. I think it was like three sons. Three or four, maybe it was five. Rukmi and all, they started all with Ruk, their names. So the main son, the oldest boy, was Rukmi. And the only girl was Rukmini. And sages and saints used to visit the kingdom of Vidarbha, like Narada Muni. And they would tell Rukmini, because she was coming into marriageable age, extremely beautiful woman, beautiful princess. And she was coming into marriageable age, and they all said, all these saints and holy people, sages, would tell her, Rukmini, there's only really one man for you, and that is Sri Krishna. He is the most qualified choice for you in marriage, for your husband. And they would tell her all about Krishna and his qualities and his pastimes and so many different things. And this is how she learned about Krishna, and she began to meditate on him from a young age. And that was that for her. As far as she was concerned, Krishna was going to be her husband. Rukmini, in reality, is the goddess of fortune. She is Lakshmi in yet another form. The goddess of fortune is eternally the wife of God, of Vishnu. Vishnu, Krishna, same. So she is destined, in that sense, to be married to Krishna. But her brother, Rukmi, even though her whole family and all the people who were closest to this in the kingdom all wanted her to marry Krishna, her whole family couldn't wait for this to be arranged, except her brother Rukmi, who wanted her to marry Shishupal. So he ignored all that, and he arranged for her marriage to Shishupal. And Shishupal was an enemy of Krishna, sworn enemy of Krishna. So it was 2 days before her wedding, and she sent a Brahmin messenger. Brahmin, in this sense, means someone who could be trusted, someone she could rely on. She sent him to go and see Krishna and give him a message. In the message it said, I have selected your lordship as my husband, and I therefore request you to accept me as your wife. You are the supreme powerful, O lotus-eyed one. Now I belong to you. If that which is enjoyable for the lion to eat is taken away by the jackal, it will be a ludicrous affair. So she said, you know, she's suitable for the lion, but she's been betrothed to the jackal. It's not good. Therefore, I request you to immediately take care of me before I am taken away by Shishupal or any other princes like him. So that was the message. So what happened? She went to the, it was the day of the marriage. I can't remember now. She went to the temple. It was a Durga temple, I think, or some manifestation of the goddess, to get the blessings. And she told him to either meet her on the way to that temple or on the way home from the temple. And Krishna showed up. And he just immediately went and took her and led her to his chariot. And everybody was just standing there, what's going on? Put her in his chariot. Got the horses going and off he went. Shishupal, he's stealing your bride. And Balaram then had immediately come behind him with the phalanx of soldiers and army, the full army. And there was a battle. In the meantime, Krishna kidnapped Rukmini according to her wishes and took her home. And that's what happened. So, what do you learn from that? Now, I'm not suggesting that we are the goddess of fortune incarnate. Well, what we learn from that is if we appeal to Krishna sincerely, maybe you're in a tough situation, maybe you're in a difficult situation, and you need help, you can appeal, which I'm sure you've done since you were probably children on some level. Rukmini's love for Krishna was knew no bounds. He couldn't say no because of the depth of her love and because of her appeal. So he went and he rescued her. So then also Sudama Vipra. When Krishna was at the Gurukul in his childhood, the school of the guru, then would be sent to the school of the guru to learn, study. And one of his good friends was Sudama. Now Krishna, according to Varna, was a Kshatriya by birth, administrator, a prince, warrior, protector. Kshatriyas are those whose job, whose role, is to look after the people. Nowadays, they've come in the form of politicians. Welcome to Kali Yuga. They will look you in the eyes and they will tell you, I will do this for you, I will do that for you, and I will do that for you. And like I told you 4 years ago, when you elected me, and just because I didn't do all those things doesn't mean that you shouldn't re-elect me now. Welcome to Kali Yuga. So, anyway, Krishna is a Kshatriya. And Sudama, his friend, they were children, was a Brahmin. But they were very close. Sudama came from very poor circumstances. Time had passed and Sudama was living with, he had married, he was living with his wife. Dirt poor, I mean completely. You could read the newspaper through his clothing. He's wearing rags, not cleaned. Deeply devoted to God, he and his wife. Never enough to eat. But he was following Brahman Dharma. And his wife said to him, "Your friend Krishna is a prince. Remember, you went to school with him. You told me about him. Not only is he a prince, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Now, when Krishna was here on earth 5,000 years ago, it's not like everybody knew he was God. They didn't. Prabhupada says in another place, he says, how many people actually knew Krishna was God, Prabhupada? He said a few hundred. A few hundred, that's all. You know, some would have been told that this is God. Okay, you know, tell me another one. Some wouldn't believe, or some wouldn't, you don't recognize. You don't necessarily recognize unless you're on that level. Right? So she said to Sudama, can't you go visit your old friend in Dwarka, in his beautiful city, his capital city, with 16,108 palaces plus more? Could you not visit him and maybe ask him for something? I've told you many times, I will not ask him for anything. It is not my place to ask him. Visiting him, that's a good idea. I will agree. I'll go to visit him. She said, well, you can't go empty-handed. You have to give him something. You have to bring a gift. You can't go to visit without a gift. So she went to the next door neighbor and borrowed some chipped rice. Chipped rice is your lowest quality of rice. And most of you would not really want to eat it if you didn't have to. And she took the little bit of chipped rice and she tied it into a little bundle, some worn out cloth, and gave it to him, sent him on his way. He arrived in Dwarka after some time, naturally. How did he get there? He walked. He walked. Do people still do that in India? Oh, yes. The sadhus do. The sadhus do. We went to Badrinath one May, because you can only go from like May to September. You can only get through in the roads. High, high Himalaya. Like 12,000 feet up. And we were in an old Ambassador, my wife and I, driver in front. I said, does this car have AC? Driver laughs. He said, what do you need AC for? You're going to the Himalaya. I said, oh yeah, okay, you got a point there. So we start driving, and we're driving up, and you're looking at buses, trucks falling off the road, hundreds of feet below, parts of the road missing. You have to go around. It's an interesting experience. And all along the road, almost all along the road, at intervals, are the sadhus. And they are walking up the same road you're going, bare feet. Yeah. Whatever they own, it's on their back. Water pot, a blanket, if they're fortunate they got a blanket, you're going to need a blanket up there. Stick, walking stick. And so we passed so many sadhus, because we're in the Ambassador. Ambassador is a car made in India, in case you don't know that. It's a famous car in India. And, you know, so we'd go up, and we arrived, it was up to maybe a 16-hour trip, something like that, from Rishikesh. And then finally we reached it, nightfall. And then we see all the sadhus. They're showing up one by one, you know. A little later on, over the next few days, they're all arriving. That's what they do. So that's what Sudama did. But he didn't have to go up to the mountain. He just had to go to the Arabian Sea. Krishna welcomed him very warmly. He gave him a seat. He began to fan him, stroke his legs, rub his legs for him for such a long journey, massage. And Rukmini did also chamara in the fan, keep him cool. They made sure he was had water to wash and fed him sumptuous prasadam, sumptuous food like this man probably hadn't eaten in years. Krishna's, I'll read this part now to you from Krishna book. Sudama Vipra was not at all attached to material enjoyment or material opulence. Krishna was teasing him a little bit. Now, Sudama, you didn't come here to see me without bringing a gift, did you? Because he knew what he brought, you see. What did you bring for me? I'd like to have that gift, thank you. So he unties the cloth with the chip rice. Here, my friend, it's all we had. So Krishna has one morsel of chip rice. He's, oh, this is the most delicious chip rice I have ever had. Probably the only chip rice he'd ever had. Anyway, that's what he said. While Krishna was speaking to Sudama, he ate one morsel of chipped rice from his bundle. When he attempted to eat a second morsel, Rukmini Devi, the goddess of fortune herself, he's there with Rukmini, his wife, who's been there with him for some time now, built her a palace. Ladies, huh? Come on. You all want your palace, don't you? Rukmini checked the Lord by catching hold of his hand after he had one morsel of chipped rice. After touching the hand of Krishna, Rukmini said, "My dear Lord, this one morsel of chipped rice is sufficient to cause him who offered it to become very opulent in this life and to continue his opulence in the next life. My Lord, you are so kind to your devotee that even this one morsel of chipped rice pleases you very greatly, and your pleasure assures the devotee opulence in both this life and the next. This indicates that when food is offered to Krishna with love and devotion." Sudama had great love for Krishna. It was his childhood friend. You know, sometimes you have a childhood friend with whom you're very close, and then you grow up, and then you move away, and so many things happen, and then you go back to visit, and then you see your old childhood friend, and that you haven't seen perhaps in years. And many of those old feelings come back. They're there. They haven't gone away. It's like you pick up where you left off, isn't it? With people with whom you're close. This indicates that when food is offered to Krishna with love and devotion and he is pleased and accepts it from the devotee, Rukmini Devi, the goddess of fortune, becomes so greatly obliged to the devotee that she has to go personally to the devotee's home to turn it into the most opulent home in the world. That's what it says. If one feeds Narayan, God, here, whatever food we cook, vegetarian food, it is first offered to Narayan, God, to Krishna on the altar. Just different names for God. That's all. To Krishna on the altar. Then it becomes his mercy, his prasad. Then we have it. And we get the spiritual benefit from it because we first offered it with love and devotion to God. This you can do at home, at your house, in your kitchen. especially nice if you have a little shrine, even if you have a shelf with a picture of Krishna or the gods. You offer incense or a deep or a flame candle, and then you have the food afterward. So she has to go and turn it into the most opulent home in the world. If one feeds Narayan sumptuously, the goddess of fortune herself, Lakshmi, automatically becomes a guest in one's house. What happens if Lakshmi becomes a guest in your house? If Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, takes up residence in your house, what happens? You have everything you need. When? Always. Always. Lakshmi is especially pleased when the pantry is full. Says that in the Shastra. When the fridge is full, plenty of food that we can cook with, make nice things. Yeah, she comes. She comes, you can stop worrying, okay? Your worries are over. But this bill and this bill, your worries are over. Manu and I were saying beforehand about the bills. But the bills keep coming in no matter what we do. Yes. And I said the bills will keep coming until the end of creation. And then, when you come back in the next round of creation, they go, oh, and by the way, from last time you will... I don't know if they'll do that, but... Somebody's keeping track, right? So... Invite Lakshmi into your home. By what? By looking after Krishna. Oh, this is such a difficult science to understand. It's so simple. It's so straightforward. Your child can do it. Your children should do it. They should be encouraged to do it. It's so simple. It's so sweet. It's pure. The learned Brahmin Sudama passed that night at the house of Lord Krishna, and while there, he felt as if he were living on a Vaikuntha planet. Well, he was living on a Vaikuntha planet. If Krishna lives there, that's Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha means no stress. No stress. No worry. That's what Vaikuntha means. The spiritual planets are called the Vaikuntha planets. Why? Because everybody's happy. When? All the time. Always. Just like every last one of you would like to be. If only I was happy all the time. What would life be like then? Huh? Well, go stay at Krishna's house overnight and see. You'll find out. Because wherever Krishna is, the original Narayan and Rukmini Devi, the goddess of fortune, life there is non-different than in the spiritual planets. Then what? He went on his way the next day, with dressed in his rags, as usual, and went off home. Thank Krishna for his wonderful hospitality. Krishna thanked him for his delicious chipped rice. And off he went home. When he reached his home, he saw that everything was wonderfully changed. He saw that in place of his cottage, there were big palaces made of valuable gemstones and jewels, glittering like the sun, the moon, and rays of fire. Not only were there big palaces, but at intervals, there were beautifully decorated parks. In those parks, there were nice lakes full of lotus flowers and beautiful lilies, and there were flocks of multicolored birds. Seeing the wonderful conversion of his native place, the Brahmin began to think to himself, how am I seeing all these changes? How could this have happened? Where did this come from? Does this place belong to me or to someone else? It is the same place where I used to live. Then how has it so wonderfully changed? Well, let me tell you, when he walked in the door, his wife was really happy to see him. And she was dressed so beautifully in her silk sari. And she never looked more radiant. And she was so, so grateful, my friends. She was so grateful. And he was dumbfounded. Sudama, what happened? Everything changed. Krishna has blessed you. He never said anything to me about it. Well, he doesn't have to say anything, does he? You're looking at it. So again, Prabhupada says, what the devotee actually offers the Lord is not needed by the Lord. What can you give to God that God needs? In terms of material things. For he is self-sufficient. If the devotee offers something to the Lord, it acts for his own interest. Because whatever a devotee offers the Lord comes back in a quantity, again, a million times greater than what was offered. One does not become a loser by giving to the Lord. One becomes a gainer by millions of times. He almost said exactly the same sentence again. Arjuna. Everything's personal. Huh? Personal relationship. Sudama, Krishna. Rukmini meditated on him. She gained the personal relationship. She won it. She became his wife. Right? He had a personal exchange with the fruit wala, personal exchange with the sandal, with chandan wala. Huh? It's all personal. Arjuna, the famous Arjuna, the greatest warrior on the planet of that time. Agni Dev, fire god, came to Krishna and said, may I consume the Kandava forest with fire. He's the fire god. He wanted to devour the Kandava forest because it was full of herbs, drugs, wonderful plants to restore his health and rejuvenate him. Krishna says, yes, you may. And Arjuna accompanied him to the forest. And after Agni had devoured the entire forest, Agni offered Arjuna a specific bow known as Gandiva, his famous bow. Arjuna is an archer, as we know. Four white horses, one chariot, and an invincible quiver with two specific arrows considered to be talismans, which had so much power that no warrior could counteract them. With this little agreement between Krishna and Agni, Arjuna was blessed with these magnificent weapons, since there was an important battle that was going to be fought sooner or later, as we know. What else did he do for his friend Arjuna, his cousin? Arjuna met his young sister at one point. Boy, she's really attractive, Subhadra. And Krishna said, oh, I see you like my sister, Arjuna. Well, yes, I do, Krishna. She's very attractive, very nice girl. Yes, I think the two of you would make a good match. It'd be good if you married her. In the meantime, Balaram, his older brother, wanted to betroth her to Duryodhana, the antagonist of the Mahabharata. Anyway, Arjuna got her. So, And in fact, Krishna arranged for Arjuna to kidnap Subhadra and take her away. Now, there's two instances of kidnapping a fair maiden, and these are Kshatriyas. This is what these guys do. It's kind of frowned upon. But nowadays we don't call it kidnapping. We call it eloping. If they both agree and then they run away, that's eloping. We don't need any weapons for that. Might need weapons when the father comes and goes, "What do you do with my daughter?" Then you might need a weapon. Protect yourself. I had that experience in my life, but I won't tell you about it. Stay on topic here. Arjuna was there with Krishna when Bhima killed Jarasandha. And of course, Krishna's famous as Parthasarathi, the chariot driver of Arjuna. Sarathi, sa, rati, rati, rata is chariot, and rati is one who drives the chariot. And Partha is another name for Arjuna, his mother. Her name is, one of her names, Kunti, is Prita, and from Prita we get Partha. So the son is named Partha. So Parthasarathi. There's a lovely temple in Chennai, Parthasarathi Temple. I'm sure many of you have been there. I've been there myself more than once. It's very nice. And who has the mustache? Is it Arjuna or is it Krishna? It's Krishna has the mustache, isn't it? Yeah, that's, I remember that. Because you don't usually see Krishna with a mustache. He agreed to drive Arjuna's chariot in the Battle of Kurukshetra. He said he wouldn't fight. He's God, He's the best fighter. He's the best at everything. He said, "But I will not take up arms. But I will drive your chariot." Really? Okay. Drive my chariot. Did he drive your chariot? Did you ask him? Why didn't you ask him? You should ask him. What will your life become like if Krishna is driving your chariot? What will you have to worry about? Tell me. When you make that connection, and you know he's there because you can feel him. You say, "Oh no, I can't see him." No. You can feel him. One day you'll see. Now you can feel. You can sense. Pay attention. That's all. Then, what happens in the middle of the speaking of the Bhagavad Gita before the battle? Now Arjuna knows he's God, he knows Krishna's God, but he doesn't know at that point the full extent of who Krishna is and what he's capable of. Then the Vishvarupa, the universal form. Sky disappears, everything disappears, the earth disappears, and all of a sudden they're all the gods and everything going on in creation, and the galaxy and the solar system and outer space and everything all around him. You know how we have an orientation, we have a sense of balance in our ears, and balance makes us walk upright and straight. And if you ever lose that, or if we get dizzy, or lightheaded sometimes, and we have to sit down in order for that balance to come back. You know what I mean, yeah? Well, that was all gone for Arjuna. There was nothing to orient himself to. We orient ourselves to the horizon, right? To walls around us, or to the sky. There is nothing. It was all this whole manifestation of the universal form is what took place. So these are the things he gave to Arjuna, his dear friend, his loving friend. That's a lot, no? He organized for him and spoke to him Bhagavad Gita, what's more valuable than that, and let him be the hero of the battle and win the battle and take all the credit. God is humble. God is humble. Not in the Old Testament of the Bible, he's not. He is here. He doesn't need to be the most important person. He wants you to be the most important person. And how do you do that? You just simply acknowledge him. Acknowledge that he's there. And be grateful. Putana. The first demon, the first shapeshifter that was sent to kill Krishna as a little baby. Demoness. Ugly by nature, but she's a shapeshifter. So she turned herself into this beautiful woman, full breasts. Back in those days, if you have milk in your breasts, oh, here, breastfeed my child. It's very common. Or you get a, what do you call it, wet nurse. Breastfeed the child, no? So she came, said, I would, and she was so beautiful. And all the women, the cowherd women that were around there with Krishna, ooh, who's this? She sauntered in. Oh, I would like to breastfeed the baby. Oh, okay. Hand her the baby. And she had put what on her nipple? Poison on her nipple. Kill this baby, Krishna. Because Krishna was predicted that he would kill Kamsa, the wicked king. So what did Krishna do? When he latched on and he began to breastfeed, he sucked the life force out of Putana. And when she died, her shape shifted, her form shifted back into its ugly self. She lay there, and the coward women were horrified. What? Who was this? What happened? And she was given moksha. Why was she given moksha when she had come to kill him with the poisonous breath? Her punishment, her reward was moksha, liberation. No more births and deaths. Finished, get off the wheel of reincarnation. So that was her reward. Why? Because she offered her breast to him in a motherly fashion. That's why. That's the reasoning behind it. So can you imagine? She did not serve him in love and devotion, but she made a gesture. Here, please, take some milk. So where does that leave you? When you offer something without poison. Right? There are two kinds of transcendentalists. Namely, impersonalists, merging into the oneness of God, the energy, as I stated at the beginning, Brahman realization. And the personalists, who want to have the loving, reciprocal relationship directly with God. Okay? The personalists are interested in transcendental variegatedness. We get bored, my friends. Am I the only guy that gets bored? Oh, I'll tell you, I get bored fast. It's my Gemini nature. Do you do the same thing all day long? The exact same thing all day long? You would get stir crazy if you did that. How many different things do you do in a given day? Can we even count them all? To keep yourself interested, stimulated, break the monotony sometimes, go for a walk, read a book, chant some mantras, meditate, whatever you might do. Why? Because it makes our lives interesting. We need that variety. What do we say in English? Variety is the spice of life. Is it true? Of course it is. The devotees become jubilant by hearing the descriptions of the personal activities of the Supreme Lord, whereas the impersonalists, who are actually more attracted by the impersonal feature of the Lord, the energy, are only superficially attracted by the Lord's personal activities. As such, in spite of coming in contact with the pastimes of the Lord, the impersonalists do not fully realize the benefit to be derived in a personal relationship with God. That's what Prabhupada says. Krishna Book, Chapter 80. So, final statement. Klesho dika tarastesham avyakta asakta chetasam avyakta hi gatir dukham devad bir avapyate. Bhagavad Gita. For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested, impersonal feature of the Supreme, advancement, spiritual advancement, is very difficult. It's troublesome, is what he says. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. Well, guess who those who are embodied is? Us, my friends. But those who worship me, he says, it's Krishna speaking, giving up all their activities unto me, offering it to somebody. Krishna, this is for you. You might say, well, I'm going to go play a tennis game for exercise. I like tennis. Fine, go play tennis. Offer it to him. I wish you were playing on the other side, Krishna. I'll beat you in tennis. Give him a challenge. So anything you do, you can offer. Giving up all their activities unto me and being devoted to me without deviation. Engaged in devotional service, always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds upon me. O Arjuna, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. There you go. That's it. You just got the key. That's what you do. How hard is it? It's not difficult at all. It's training the mind to develop that mindset of thinking about Krishna all day long, every day, throughout the day. It doesn't have to be big production. You don't have to sit on it. You can do that, but it's just as you, throughout your day, whatever you do, you here, make the connection. That's called becoming God conscious, Krishna conscious. No, that's it. Who can't do that? We all can. Okay, thank you for your kind attention. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Questions, comments? You got it all. Ishwara?
And somewhere in the literature I read that the people at the time when Krishna was here, they didn't realize that he was an incarnation of Lord Vishnu. Can you verify?
Yeah, well, it's just what I said earlier. As Prabhupada describes it, only a few hundred people knew he was God. And some were told he was God. Come on, that guy's not God. How do we know Krishna is God? I mean, all the things he did unbelievable things. miraculous things, countless miracles, as the Christians like to. Well, has he done any miracles? Prabhupada plays all that down. But that's what Krishna did. I mean, he did all kinds of things that no human could do. That is the proof that he's God. Okay. Well, I can share one. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is Prabhupada's guru, and Bhaktisiddhanta was the son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, also another acharya in our line. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a high court judge. Even though he was Bengali, he knew many languages, like most Indians do. It's been my experience. How many languages do you speak? Four, five, of course. He knew many languages, and he was stationed in Odisha, in Puri. And he lived right on the Grand Road, on the main road where they have Rath Yatra Festival, the Festival of the Chariots. And during the festival, as Lord Jagannath's chariot was passing through, oftentimes Jagannath stops. And no matter how hard you pull or push the chariot, it won't go anywhere. It won't. And everybody knows that. We have to wait till Jagannath's ready to move again. Now, sometimes that's a few minutes. Sometimes it's a day or even longer. Depends. They can't move him. It's historically true. He stopped right in front of Bhaktivinoda's house. And they had their firstborn son, Bhaktisiddhanta, Bimal Prasad, a little guy. Just a small child, like the one we had here a moment ago. And they lifted the baby up and offered him to Lord Jagannath. Jagannath's huge, but he's way up high in the chariot. And they offered the baby like this. And a garland fell down off Jagannath and landed on the child. And that was the blessing from Bhaktisiddhanta. And when we were there last for the Rath Yatra Festival in Puri, which is, I don't know now, maybe 2 years ago, and we were upstairs in a restaurant overlooking the parade, and Jagannath came by and his chariot stopped right in front of us. So the rickshaw wala, who was there with us, good man, Balaram, he says, Prabhu, do you want to go pull Jagannath's chariot? I said, I'm looking at the crowd, you know, hundreds of thousands below. The crowd's got its own kind of, you can't control yourself in there, you know. It's like a school of fish, you know. I said, yeah. I'd love to pull Jagannath's chair. He says, come on, I'll take you. So he grabs my hand, takes me by the hand, we go into the crowd. He's making his way through the crowd. And then the crowd starts to move. I said, well, you don't want to fall down. Whatever you do, you don't want to fall down. I mean, they're all jammed together. There's no room. Everybody's close like this. And finally, we made our way, and there I am, right in front of the rope. I told the story before. And I picked up the rope, and on the inside, there's two ropes. And on the inside of each rope, there's a string of military guys in military uniforms. They go in all kinds of different military uniforms, but they're all officials, you know, young men. And they all got bottles of water like this, but big size for them to drink because it's so hot. You know, they're drinking. It's a plastic bottle. Put the lid back on. Some of them are full. Some of them are half full. Some of them are empty. And they say, they're telling the crowd, put the rope down. The rope is this thick, yeah, very thick, like that. Put the rope down. We'll tell you when. It's time to move. And some of them don't listen. So one guy is going all the way down the line, inside the rope line, with the bottle, and he's hitting everybody on the head like this, the bottle, and this one, then this one, like that. This doesn't hurt them. Put the rope down, put the rope down like this. And he gets to me, and he goes, and he starts to whack everyone else. I didn't get whacked for some reason, so that was good. Then we moved. And I got to pull Jagannath's chariot. So for me, that was great mercy. Stopped, and we went and did it. So, Jai Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Ki Jai. Okay? We good? Hare Krishna.